Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian. This is Insight Podcast number 205, recording this on Monday, the 5th of March, 2012, Mobile World Congress. 2012 was last week. Ewan's away getting packing for his American trip, going to South by Southwest, but maybe he'll join us at the end of the podcast if he gets free. In the meantime, we have David Gilson up in Hull.
Hello, Steve. Hello, Riff. And hello, everyone listening at home.
Yes, the inimitable Mr. Rafe Blanford, who was there all week, slugging his guts out in Barcelona.
Yeah, I mean, I know Steve thinks I was partying all week, but there was a lot of work going on as well. I'm looking forward to sharing a lot of what I learnt with you on this podcast.
Jolly good. I guess there has to be one main point of interest here, the Nokia 808 PureView, branded as the last hurrah for Symbian by many people, possibly accurately, possibly not, who knows, but certainly a welcome, kind of an appeasement, if you like, by Nokia to the Symbian faithful, as has been described by some commentators. A bit disingenuous, that, because this has basically been in development, as Nokia said, for 5 years. I quoted in my article the N93, and I rather got slammed by that. But I think that was the genesis of the idea, that they thought, this N93 optical zoom in a camera phone, it's a great idea, but it's just too big, too bulky. There must be another way to do it. And a year or so later, they had a revelation. Thought, well, I know, we'll have a high megapixel count, a big sensor array, and we'll get better images from this big sensor array by interpolating down, data down. So they had this idea, but the electronics wasn't there. The processors weren't there. The sensors weren't there yet. They had to wait and wait. Eventually, the time became right. I think somewhere around 2009, 2010, Rafe, they finally started to prototype the hardware designs. And here in 2012, we're finally seeing the 808 PureView released with this 41 megapixel sensor. It's huge, 1 over 1.2 optical format, and it produces basically pretty darn good 5 megapixel and 8 megapixel shots, with pulling together all the data from all those pixels into some lower resolution super pixels. Rafe.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I actually spoke to a couple of the people behind this 808 device, and they described how they had the kind of aha moment 5 years ago in a Tokyo bar. And actually, they drew the original concept on a serviette, and that still exists. I think we'll probably see a photo of that appear before too long. But I think you have to put that in the context, and you're right. It was after the N93 and kind of the problems with the optical zoom in that, mainly around the fragility of the actual camera unit, but also around noise that it produced for video. And I think that, you know, there were some other problems. I think we're well aware of the fragility of the N93. They said, that how can we do this? And so the thought came, well, perhaps we could do it a bit like a satellite does it. And satellites use the same kind of trick of having a big sensor and then downsampling or using part of it to capture an image. But of course, going from something the size of a satellite to putting it into a mobile phone, a completely different engineering achievement. And yes, they had to develop it from scratch. And I don't think people have quite realized what a big engineering leap this is. And actually to have the idea and to think about it that far in advance, you know, this is when we were being amazed by the N95, and to think that far ahead, the conceptual leap that was required, really quite staggering, and to spend this time developing it. And, you know, these are not off-the-shelf components. These are things that have been specially developed for this phone, you know, in partnership between Nokia and some other companies. You know, Toshiba's been talked about, Carl Zeiss for the optics, and various others. And also, of course, someone like Carl Zeiss does the concepting and the design. They don't actually do the manufacturing necessarily. And so there are lots and lots of components in this that make this a really unique device. And we'll talk a bit more about results in a minute, but I've never seen anything like this. And it really is a generational leap.
The other big thing, of course, is that the fact that they've had to use a very large sensor, which is 1 over 1.2 optical format, and basically necessitating a really rather large camera bulge on the back. Now, people who've handled the phone, Ray, said that despite the bulge, it actually feels very comfortable in the hand because they've used lots of curves and materials used are quite high quality. What were your impressions of it as a general device that people might not be scared of because of the size of the camera?
Yes, I mean, I saw a lot of the commentary around it being ugly, and I actually didn't think it was that bad. I would compare it as kind of a cross between the N8 and the C7, you know, very similar kind of rounding to the C7. Obviously, it is a little bit thicker, particularly on the camera bulge, but you're still going, you're going to get a camera bulge if you have a camera that good. So I think people accept it much as they did with something like the N8 or some of the older, you know, camera phone devices. So inevitably, there's a compromise between how much functionality you get in the design. But I actually thought it sat in the hand very well. For a 4-inch screen device, it didn't feel massively big. And it's using kind of these hardened polycarbonate plastic, so it actually has got a slightly ceramic finish, so it feels really comfortable in the hand. And as with a lot of the recent Nokia devices, very good build quality, you know, a bit of a contrast to some of the periods from maybe going back 3 or 4 years. So you know, Nokia certainly returned to form, and I don't think anyone will complain about the build quality of this device. You know, and for people like Steve who like their removable batteries, it's great that it's got a removable battery. And it comes in these different colours, sort of the black version, the red version, which I think are all quite attractive, actually. But I will say the design like that is very subjective, and there were clearly some people who didn't like it. From an entirely personal point of view, I actually think I preferred the design of this to something like the N8. At the time, I would have probably preferred the N8. It's just how these things go in cycles. But I've always liked the kind of rounded plastic. I think if you look at the devices I've liked, you know, going back to things like the C7, but before that, the E-series devices, you can see where perhaps that's come from.
You can remember my headline on AS a few months back, Kurt Cobain versus Madonna, where the N8 is sort of Kurt Cobain. It's all rough and metallic and hard-edged. And Madonna is this, you know, sexy, sleeky, curved entity. And this is very much follows the curved school of thought. Just a few more points on the camera, Rafe. Because it's got such a large sensor, and because it's got this interpolation, if you like, the aggregation of information from so many physical pixels to get to the virtual pixels at 5 megapixels, you've got the possibility of completely eliminating sensor noise. So when you get indoors, for example, say it's, you're not shooting something that's very close up, so you don't need the Xenon flash. You're just shooting at an indoor scene at an event or in your office. There's not much light around. Any traditional phone camera, you'll have all sorts of little speckles. If you go and zoom in right in on your image on your desktop, all these little speckles and bits of grainy artifacts and ridges and ripples and lines, all rather ugly. With so many sensors on offer here, they can basically eliminate the random digital noise and get to both blacks and solid colors. And that, I think, will be a big, big effect. David?
Yes, just to pick up on that point, I was looking at a gallery by James Berland on Flickr taken with V808 that he was given during MWC. And he had a photo of a press room, of which was a very small section in the distance had our own Mr. Blanford. And one photo was like the whole like interpolated photo. And then the next was like a one-to-one pixel section of it. And on that, you can just see a little bit of speckling as you would expect to see on an ordinary camera phone. But yes, when you have the full size, it does just smooth and average everything out nicely.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the results of the images, I mean, the headline feature is obviously the 41 megapixel sensor, but I think quite deliberately we're not talking about that because it's kind of irrelevant. You know, PureView has three elements, which I'll talk about in a minute. But these sample images, when they're at 5 megapixels, you know, so-called PureView mode, these are not like 5 megapixel images from another camera. You know, I've always kind of thought, oh, there's not much you can do to improve on that. But actually, what's really startling about this is just how much more detail and clarity there is in these images from the 808. And I don't think people, you know, can fully appreciate it until they see it and maybe printed out, as particularly at this kind of A2 size. You know, we're talking really big posters. You look at the detail on them and then compare it to something else, and it truly is incredible. So this isn't just, you know, kind of an incremental leap in imaging. I mean, we look at something like the 82 or the 86 and then the N8, and they were all, you know, substantial improvements, but you could kind of see where the improvement had come from. You know, it was bigger sensor size. But this is a much bigger leap, which is why I've described it as a generational leap. And I've never seen anything like this in mobile in terms of innovation. You know, things like, you know, the iPhone introducing the idea of touch, get close, but that had been well signposted, and you could see it from other bits of technology. You know, this is something new to the world of camera imaging, and you know, you can look at DSLs, and obviously they're still going to be superior, but in terms of compact point and shoot, this hasn't been done before. And you know, this kind of idea of using a big sensor and oversampling, and then there's other bits and pieces to it, which again I'll talk about in a minute. So I just need to get across just how revolutionary this is.
I was just talking to Miriam Joire, Tank Girl, yesterday on phone show chat, and she was mentioning that back in the 1990s, she was working in image processing in corporate, corporate America, and they had a similar arrangement actually with a huge sensor array and interpolating for large numbers of pixels down to get higher quality images, but that required like two supercomputers chained together, and it wasn't being done in real time. And here we've moved on to 20 years or so, we've got the same thing happening in real time in a phone. And just one thing before I let David in, on the N86 you mentioned there and the N8, if you zoom right, take a photo at full resolution, you then crop right in using your desktop, photo editor, you go in to see the individual pixels, and they're a bit of a mess. I mean, the overall photographs look great, but once you start getting down to pixel level, you start seeing little errors and jaggies, and things aren't quite, a bit of noise, things aren't quite perfect. With the 808 Pure View, I'm entranced by the fact that you'll actually have, quote, perfect pixels, and that every single pixel will have its value taken from 8 or 9 other pixels around it and underneath it, effectively averaging out all the errors, all the noise, and every pixel will have just the perfect value in terms of color and luminance, and that's just really quite special. David?
I mean, what you've been saying, Steve, about taking the images at 5 or 8 megapixels and having the image averaged out is absolutely right, and also that creates nice small file sizes for putting up to social networks. However, if you're if you're sightseeing or something, there is an argument to be made for taking the images at the maximum 38 megapixels and then taking home and then cropping down later on, because actually with the amount of detail that this sensor can capture, you can actually find things that you probably might not have spotted at the time, and you can actually explore the whole scene all over again in these huge images.
That's right, David. I mean, this is referred to as full resolution mode, and actually you don't need to wait till you get home. You can actually crop it on the phone. And I tested this with a couple of images, and it's very quick. I think it's using the imaging coprocessor that's sitting on this phone that's there in order to handle the huge number of megapixels going through the phone. I'd actually say I think most people will still use it in pure view mode. It's no different to automatic mode on your camera. But one of the things I really like about the Pure View 808 is that actually within the camera UI, there are effectively three modes. And you could almost think about them as three different camera applications, but obviously they're accessible from within the one interface. And you've got the automatic mode, which has very, very light controls. I mean, things around flash and stuff like that. And most people will use that most of the time and be perfectly happy. Then there's kind of scene mode, which lets you have a bit more control. You know, you can set whether you're inside, night mode, fast moving stuff and that kind of thing, just a little bit more control. Then there's this creative mode where you can opt to, if you wish to, use the full resolution mode. And as you say, it's 38 megapixels rather than 41. That's because of the sensor geometry. And you can then do some interesting zooming and cropping around. Then there's also interval timing for time-lapse photography and bracketing for HDR and a lot of controls, a lot of detail in there. So the creative types can use that. So I like the fact there's these three modes. But I think actually Nokia made a pretty bold statement by saying, we're going to use it in this pure view mode and 5 megapixels enough. And we've talked a lot about the megapixel race. And it was kind of funny in the media, everyone was going, wow, 41 megapixel camera. But that's not really the point. The point is to use this 41 megapixels intelligently to produce photos that are substantially better than, you know, what you get elsewhere, but yet still have that 5 megapixel size, which if we're honest is perfectly sufficient for printing out anything up to, you know, I'd say A3 size, and certainly on the demos that were scattered around the booth and on the wall printed, they did look fantastic. And I think actually most people probably used a resolution of no more than 1,000 pixels wide on websites, on social networks, and then print out maybe a 6x4 image. So there's a lot of sense to that. So I really hope this is an end to that megapixel race, and this discussion will now move on to how you can use that most intelligently. And that applies in video mode as well. And the big thing, of course, about this PV is this ability to zoom in. It is worth pointing out here that when you zoom in, obviously you gradually move away from that perfect pixel, you know, 3:1 or 2:1, and eventually when you're at 1:1. But I just want to underline that when you're at this 1:1 mode, you're actually using the pixels in the center of the sensor. That's important because those pixels in the center of the sensor are of a higher quality. They're less prone to distortion than the ones on the outside.
I should mention that, Rafe, the pixels are exactly the same as the one on the outside, but because it's at the center of the lens's sphere of operation, then the pixels are receiving a more accurate picture.
There we go, being tech corrected by Steve there, and he's absolutely right. But as far as the layman's concerned, you'll actually get better 5 megapixels image, despite the fact it's one-to-one on the center of that sensor, and you would using a sort of a standard 5 megapixel sensor. So even at sort of one-to-one mode, it will still be producing better photos. And that's leaving aside the fact, you know, obviously the optics are absolutely superb. I mean, just to underline the difficulty, talking about the optics for a moment, that's 10 times the precision that we've seen on any other camera phone. And quite frankly, the manufacturing process involved in that is staggering. So, you know, I kind of joked at one point during the week that there aren't enough superlatives in the dictionary to talk about the imaging on this device. And I haven't really changed my judgment on that. It's, as I say, it's so unusual to see such a big leap forward. And of course, we have to wait for, you know, these are all prototype devices at the moment. We have to wait for the final thing. The low light performance at the moment is weak. But talking to Damien Dilling, one of Nokia's imaging experts, that's something they really want to focus on. And I mean, when I say bad, it was still better than anything else I'd seen. But looking at some of the demos of things shot in dark scenes, you know, what Steve was talking about there, the lack of noise in the 7:1, it makes a big difference because you get these really black blacks. But then when you get the contrast to the light, you get so one pixel, it changes to the other. And so you get these really sharp, kind of crystal-like images. And for example, you have a beam of light coming down in a concert. You actually capture that beam of light rather than it being diffused everywhere. And as I say, really quite remarkable when you see it in action. And of course, all the Nokia example photos are aimed at showing off at its best. But judging on what I saw, and you know, things captured at concerts, for example, and we'll talk about audio in a minute, but really quite amazing. I mean, this PureView is about three things. You know, one is the big sensor size, physically large, and obviously 41 megapixels. The second is the lens assembly or the optics from Carl Zeiss, and the third is the software algorithm, and all three of those come together to create something that's quite stunning. And it is probably worth pointing out at this point that PureView, Nokia were keen to stress, is a technology that they will use elsewhere. I suspect that won't be on Symbian devices going forward. You know, the 808 is going to be really the last big Symbian flagship for my money. There may be a couple more devices to come. I did ask about that, didn't get a definitive answer. They just continue to promise that they will invest in Symbian and in updates in the way that the market expects. So I think that sort of, it'll be market dictated. I imagine there'll be a couple more devices, but I think for the Symbian fans out there, be very glad that the 808 is kind of a last flagship. And if that's the note that Symbian finishes on, well, what a note to finish on.
Yeah, yeah. One, a couple more pieces on the camera before we just move on to perhaps the sound quality, Rafe. Just the N8, as people know, I love it because it's got the xenon flash. You can light up a normal size room, even in pitch darkness, and take photographs that are really very, very good. This is the 808 PureView. It's got a double strength xenon flash. Now, the N8 itself was half the value of the N82, so we could argue we're back to the same flash strength as the N82, which was superlative, which could light up really quite medium sized rooms on its own. And we've got that plus an LED video light or torch, which is really, really useful. One thing I absolutely miss on the N8 is going out in the dark and trying to find my way to the dustbins in the dark. And think, I've got an LED torch, and you're trying to do it with the brightness of the screen. It just doesn't matter. I think, where's my C7? Where's my E6? Where's whatever device? And now we've got the best of both worlds. Xenon flash for taking low-light photographs, gorgeously crisp, gorgeously frozen in time, and yet at the same time, you've got a torch when you need it. Very handy.
Yeah, right. And the torch activates in the same way as the other devices. You pull down on the slide lock for 3 seconds and it switches on. It's worth making the point about the xenon flash is its usefulness is actually a function of both of the power of the xenon flash, but also the optics and the sensor itself. So because we've got better optics and better sensors than on the N8 and the N82, actually you kind of combine those two together, and so it's much more effective. So talking to some people, they were sort of estimating it's probably double the distance over which it's effective. And obviously the software is also intelligent about the way it uses that. And talking of lights, you'll know that most of these camera phones have an autofocus assistance light. And some people in the past complain there isn't the ability to turn that off. That can be important in some conditions, particularly in the dark or something like that. But actually now there's a separate setting, so you can turn off the autofocused assist lamp as well. So that's kind of a good bit of example of the detail that sits in this 808 PureView and the camera UI, which I haven't talked much about, but again, it's fantastic. You know, loads of thought has gone into this. It's quite clear this is, you know, the pinnacle of Nokia's imaging achievements.
Yeah. Just one final point on the xenon and just the sensor and the optics generally. Damien Dinning was showing off in one of the videos a photo of, I think it was a carnival, so some character with a headdress at a carnival, and zoomed right in, cropped right in, and really, really crisp. See every bit on every part of the headdress. Then he explained it was taken at midnight. And you realise this wasn't a daylight shot. This was taken with flash at night, and it looks just as if it was at the broad daylight. And obviously, I'd love to get hold of these sample images. Damon, if you're listening, send them in. We'd love to analyse them and show off what the 808 Pure View can do. One final thing, Rafe, the glass in the back covering the camera for the first time, they've used Gorilla Glass for that. So even people like myself worrying about scratching that glass, or I guess it'll still smudge, but it won't scratch, and that's very important.
It is, and I was looking at the accessories that are available for the 808, and there's a case that might be called the Steve Litchfield case, which actually has a lens cover built into it, so if you're looking for extra protection, that's there as well. There's also a comeback of the Nokia accessory tripod, which is actually in two units, so you can use it both on the tripod it comes with, but also any standard tripod, and it's actually fixed grip, so you can use it with any device. I'm looking forward to getting my hands on that in due course. I think it's the HH22. We sat here raving about the camera, and it is, as I say, amazing. Are there any downsides? Well, there's just one or two things that I might mention, and as I say, it's not really fair to judge it until we actually try it out, and there's no doubt this is ahead of anything else on the market by some distance. Because of the mechanics and the physics involved, there might be some issues with depth of field. It's noticeable that when you're doing the artistic photograph, you do need to get quite close to then get the blurred kind of background, which you know you get in the more artistic photography shots. I think it's referred to bloqué or something like that.
Bokeh.
Thank you, Steve, because I'm trying to remember all these terms. The other thing is obviously because of sitting in a camera phone, there is quite a short distance between the lens assembly and the sensor itself. So clearly, given the size of the sensor, there is some clever deliberate distortion that's then corrected in software going on. Both of those are obviously things we'll look at when we actually review the device. And there's obviously some questions around what happens around the edge of the sensor field. But based on what I saw, neither of those are really big deals. So when you're looking at this as a device, people are immediately going, well, does it replace such and such thing? As far as I'm concerned, it replaces every point-and-shoot device I've seen, with maybe the exception of the really super zoom devices. And obviously, there's still some convenience in carrying around a point-and-shoot, but it's the old chestnut about the device you have with you. When it comes to DSLRs, it's going to match up to some of the DSLRs. And I think the other thing to make about the 808 is it's very easy to take photographs with. I think this will be more rewarding to amateur photographers than some DSLRs will. But I would see it as a complementary device to a DSLR. It's obviously smaller. It fits in your pocket more conveniently. So although I do expect there to be debate around, is it as good as this device or that DSLR camera? For me, at least, it's more of a complementary device. And I think, you know, camera geeks who own DSLRs are quite used to carrying around a couple of devices. And, you know, they'll often have their DSLR, but they'll have their point and shoot and maybe something in between as well. What I think the 808 has the potential to do, and, of course, future PureView devices as well, is to replace that portable device with the added convenience, of course, that it's a connected device. Yeah. And let's not forget, there's a lot more to it than just the 808's camera.
Yeah. I'll refer people listening to this podcast to our features over on the site, allaboutsymbian.com. We've done two or three fairly in-depth looks at some frequently asked questions about the 808 Pure View, and also looking at sensor and pixel size. And I'm sure there are more articles to come over the next week as Rafe delves into his notes and I get my brain into gear. One final thing about the Pure View system, which is not related to visuals, Rafe, is that they've done significant work in improving the sound. Now, the N86 and N8, and I think the E7 as well, and the E6, they all have MEMS, MEMS, microelectrical mechanical systems. And basically, it's a microphone sitting directly on a chip, which means you can get very, very accurate to digital recordings. But they were limited in terms of the amplitude they could record. Take an N8 to a concert, and the audio was pretty darn good, but you know that the bass drum would distort and it would skew the gain around. Now, what they've done here is they've got a system called HAAC, which I've forgotten what that stands for, Rafe, but it basically high amplitude something encoding, and basically means they can capture up to 140 decibels now without distortion, which I reckon is pretty darn impressive.
It is, and when you see the demos of this, I mean, it's almost as jaw-dropping as the camera. Obviously, there's less of a visual element to it. But they actually set up a comparison with two other leading devices. My understanding was the iPhone 4S and the Galaxy S2, and it was substantially better. I mean, this 140 decibel mark that you talk about, just to put that in context, that's equivalent to standing 3 or 4 meters behind a jumbo jet engine at takeoff. and it's loud enough that if you listen to it for a sustained period, you'll go deaf. So the phone can hear far better than you can. And we said before, the cameras can see far better than you can. And so it gets audio that is a lot more accurate. And also the microphones have been positioned particularly on either end of the device, so you get this stereo effect. And then that's improved in software. And actually a lot of the magic happens in the software. So you get what's called a stereo widening effect. And so the audio from this thing, that sounds very good indeed. I mean, going back to that concert recording scenario, the videos I listen to, and they can't be put up on the web because obviously there's legal reasons around that, really quite stunning. I mean, you're not getting far away from quality that you could burn onto a CD and watch on a TV and not be, you know, experts will know the difference. But for the casual listener, they'll think that it's a professional recording. It's that good. And it is, as you say, it gets rid of this distortion that is usually cut off by inferior microphones. And again, the story behind this is Nokia have actually gone away and had these microphones built specially. They've been specified by Nokia, and obviously they've done it in conjunction with partners. But it does mean it has the full reach of audio hearing that a human has. And so capturing that means you get a result that sounds much, much better. And this real recording is going to be another mark, just like PureView, that we see in future devices. And although PureView and the visual aspects took a lot of the plaudits, actually I see real recording as almost as revolutionary. And they've continued to improve all these software algorithms around things like handling the device, so it will get rid of those. If you're handling it in video mode, you won't hear it. And similarly with the auto-focused assist motor, you won't hear that. And it's probably worth pointing out at this point. I mean, there's so many things we've missed out, but in video mode you can have it focus in kind of fixed mode and continuous autofocus or hyperfocus. So Steve wrote an article a little while back saying which one was best, and so they kind of settled on hyperfocal maybe being the best one, but here you have the choice between all three, which just underlines what a premium imaging and video capture device this is.
Yeah, it's very interesting that both the PureView and the Rich Recording, they both depend on a combination of dedicated hardware, new hardware chips, and also new software, and it's the combination of the two that makes the difference. Talking of software, Rafe, can we just move on to the 808's OS? It runs Nokia Bell, aka Symbian Bell, Feature Pack 1. We've got some of the changelog up on the site, but what were your impressions of it in terms of speed and functionality?
In terms of speed, there was a notable improvement over the standard Bell devices. It's always a bit difficult to judge those in trade show conditions, because obviously these devices aren't loaded down with day-to-day applications and data, but it did seem significantly speedier. That's probably because the processor, which is actually the same as that sitting in the kind of second generation Bell devices, was running at 1.3 gigahertz as opposed to 1 gigahertz. That's actually upgraded in software, a bit like what happened with the 5800 early in its lifetime. So just that general impression of speed made a difference. Then there's a lot more widgets for the home screen, from things like weather to data tracking. A lot of the ones we kind of saw in the beta versions of Bell seem to have made it into the release. There's a really attractive mechanical clock that looks, you know, is kind of a small thing, but that little bit and pieces can make the difference in a visual impact. There are also a widget around imaging. You can kind of have images on your home screen and a whole lot more. I'll actually write an article on this on the site because there's quite a bit to talk about. Then there's an upgrade to the browser. That's much improved HTML5 support. So it gets to the point where I finally feel the Symbian browser has gone a long way to catching up with the competition. Now, there are probably still going to be some restrictions around the speed because we're on a single core processor, but the evidence I saw suggested that it'll be very good indeed, and probably the limitation is more around the screen resolution, which I think we've discussed in the past. Web browsing is probably one of the areas where the screen resolution, the NHD, it probably suffers a little bit. Elsewhere, I feel it's less concerned, but we won't get into screen resolution now. Then there's secure NFC. That doesn't mean a lot yet, but it potentially means you could have payment services on this. And again, there was a demo at MWC. I'll be writing that up. Works very impressively. I think the one that other thing that will catch people's attention is the kind of the Dolby Sound upgrade. And what this is that if you've got content with Dolby encoded content, when you plug in just any stereo headset, you'll actually get the stereo sound converted to a Dolby surround sound. It's quite hard to describe how this sounds, but you know, you switch it on and off and you can hear an immediate difference. And it feels like you're sitting in a halo of sound rather than having something coming from the left and the right. So it sounds, you know, it's all obviously clever software tricks in one sense. You know, some stuff comes from in front of you, some comes from the side and behind, and you know, it feels that it's all in the right place. And actually, you really notice it if you put the headphones on the wrong way around, if you like, because then things sort of don't match up. And this is, again, it's a software upgrade, so it's actually going to apply to some of the existing devices. We'll talk about those in a minute. But I was quite taken aback by this. And in terms of content for this, that's probably the fly in the ointment. But the Nokia Trailers application, that's going to have Dolby encoded content, and a service called Vodla, which is available in a few European markets at the moment. It's basically a video store service or video on-demand service. It's available for the web, and it's available for mobile. It's coming to TVs in 2012, and you can start watching on one, then switch on to the other easily. You know, it's all done through logins, and you can have content on multiple devices, just as a video on-demand service should be. So I'm really looking forward to trying that out once it launches in the UK. And they say they're going to expand their European presence over the next 6 months, and obviously we'll cover that when it happens. But yes, there are still going to be some limitations on getting this Dolby encoded content. And yes, there are various other bits and pieces on Feature Pack 1 as well. For example, there's a DLNA server. People who had the N95 will remember that. So you can, it's being able to play back pictures, video, audio on DLNA compatible devices. So that's a lot of TV or the Xbox or the PlayStation console, for example, also Windows Media Player. You know, the idea, you can get content off the device much more easily. Big screen is built in. So obviously when you're connecting via an HDMI cable, which of course the 808 has, that looks great as well. And there are various things like Map Suite 2.0 is included, and that has the latest, all the various maps applications, including the ability to see your photos on a map. I think that's, you know, obviously going to be important on something like the 808. And, you know, things like the social suite brought up to date, all the Facebook widgets are present and corrected. So, you know, it feels like a very polished version of Bell with a few significant functional improvements as well.
Yeah, you mentioned 1.3 gigahertz processor speed on the same platform as the older devices, the 700, which I know David's got at the moment, the 701, which you've got, and the 603, which neither of us have got. But they're all apparently going to get a processor speed bump in the update to Feature Pack 1 when that happens over the air.
That's right. It's worth pointing out here, Feature Pack 1 will be coming to the second generation of Symbian 3 devices, i.e. the original Bell devices, the 700, the 701, the 603 that you mentioned there. It probably won't be coming to the older devices, though I wouldn't be surprised if elements of it do come onto the older devices. And of course, a lot of the ones I've been talking about are software that's actually already available, should you wish to have it. That's probably because of both the processor and the RAM restrictions on those older devices. But yes, it'll be nice that the existing second generation device will get this software, but also the processor bump. And as I say, it is more polished than the original Bell, and obviously there's bug fixes as well. We haven't got a timeline on that yet. I was just told it would be in the coming months, but I would imagine it wouldn't be that far off the release date of the 808, which is due in May.
Okay. Outside the 808 PureView, Rafe, was there any sign of Symbian at the show? Any whispers, any rumours on the ground we should know about?
Well, outside the Nokia booth, there really wasn't anything at all. For all the glory around the 808 and it getting chosen as the best device in the show by the GSMA, and if you said that a year ago, I don't think anyone would have believed you. So it really was remarkable to have a Symbian device as kind of the toast of the show. And everyone was talking about it. I mean, it wasn't even close this time. Sometimes there's a couple of devices contending for, you know, most talked about device of the show. But outside that, you know, compared to a few years ago where you'd used to see Symbian devices everywhere, you know, that was a contrast. And I guess there was a tear in my eye because of that. But I think that's inevitable, and obviously reflects the strategy change that Nokia's gone through, but probably also speaks very strongly as to why Nokia chose to do that. And we won't, you know, rehash the Symbian arguments here. It's one we'll talk about in the future, I'm sure. But there are a couple of things that caught my eye. On the Nokia stand, it was NFC demos. I've already mentioned secure NFC and a kind of a payment demo, but it was also being used, for example, in Michelin signs that you get in Michelin rated restaurants. There's actually going to be NFC tags built into those, and it's in cooperation with Nokia. It will go into an application, a travel guide application, and you'll be able to get vouchers. And then there was another one that was built into the LinkedIn application, enabling you to share contact details over NFC. And then there was another demo that was tap on something on a tag and it will jump into Noki Maps. All these kind of practical applications that we've heard about for a long time, but are now seeing in reality. And all of those were really rather impressive. And I'm actually going to write them up separately because I think they're very worthy, even if they didn't get quite as much glory as something like the 808. But actually, the NFC being available in the wild, what brought it home to me most was at MWC, there's a NFC tag built into your the badge for the show, and an awful lot of people around on different stands were using the Nokia 603 as a device to scan the badge with to collect your contact details. And so Symbian was actually finding a bit of glory there, if you will.
One brief thing before we finish, it was running a bit long, guys. David, you've now had a Nokia Bell or Symbian Bell on the 700, which came with it. You've had it for a couple of months, and of course you're very experienced with Symbian and Symbian Anna before it. We just talked about a 1.3 gigahertz upgrade to speed the device up even more. I reckon the 700 and 701 were already pretty speedy, but what do you think in terms of speed? And also, do you think Bell is a big upgrade over Anna, or do you think, as some people have said on the site, that Bell was a bit of a step backwards?
I don't necessarily think Bell was a step backwards. I think Bell was absolutely needed. However, it does feel like it's come too late. On the 700, yes, speed on the 700 is absolutely fine. I happen to think that the 700 is too small to be really usable in an everyday sense, especially for the touch element sizes.
Yeah.
For example, the portrait QWERTY keyboard. On the NA, it is an improvement. I didn't actually like Bell at first, but it has grown on me, and I see the necessity for it.
Yeah.
So it is a worthwhile upgrade, because I think all, not just us on this podcast, I think most of the people listening, we're used to the S60 5th edition evolving into Anna sort of interface, and we were comfortable with it. But once you do have Bell for a few weeks, you can see that there was a necessity to move on and actually have something a little more intuitive and something that flows better, just like Bell does. I mean, just finding applications is much easier in Bell. I mean, not only can you sort things alphabetically, but you can search for things as well. And that is a lot easier and takes a lot less work than filing things away in folders and trying to remember the hierarchy that you made. And then when you inevitably have to reset the device, trying to set everything back up again. In general, the widgets are much nicer, although I hope there's an improved calendar widget in the feature pack one.
Rafe can tell you.
I can just try and remember where there was an improved calendar widget. I think there probably was one that had a different size to that which you have on just plain Bell. But I would agree with David. You know, at first I looked at Bell and thought, that's a big change. But actually, the more I've got used to it, the more I've liked it. I think more tellingly, if you ask people who are using Symbian for the first time for a while, you know, they think Bell's a big improvement. And, you know, there is this kind of idea, if it had come a bit earlier, would it have made a difference? And yes, frankly, it would have done. You know, it would have probably given Symbian a bit more life. I don't think it would have changed things in the long run. And actually, the fact it did take so long to deliver is actually reflective of the problem Symbian had from a technical point of view. You know, all that said, I actually think the 808 has the potential to act as a halo device for some of the other Bell devices. What I mean by that is a lot of people will be exposed, you know, particularly in the tech media, to the 808. And they'll suddenly go, actually, Bell's not that bad. I mean, there's still going to be this discussion, I think, about an app gap. But in terms of out-of-the-box, you know, functionality and the power of Symbian, is still pretty much unmatched on any platform, especially the cohesiveness and the kind of consistency of it. I think that's something that Nokia worked very hard on. And I think that's one of the things that's really nice about Bell. It feels well put together. Now, it's not to say there aren't holes in it. And I think people may see that a bit more with the 808, and it might have a positive effect elsewhere, especially when we're also seeing Lumia devices, and there's the Asher 203, which is a fantastic little device, by the way. E71 owners, it's that keyboard running on, you know, Series 40, but with a lot of the functionality, you know, maps, exchange, proxy browse, and that kind of thing. All of that contributed towards a very positive feel for Nokia at the show. Certainly a massive contrast to a year ago, and even the year before that, when there was the kind of the MeeGo announcement with Intel. And so all of that meant that the Nokia stand was a much more joyful place to be this time round. There was a real sense of excitement from the staff, but also from people visiting the stand. And as a result, I think Nokia came out of the show smelling of roses. You know, it really did very, very well at MWC. So it's, you know, it dominated CES. It's now dominated MWC. And honestly, if you'd said that to me a year ago, I'd have probably sniggered and thought that's not going to happen. So for me, that, in a sense, that whole complete picture of which the N8 is a contributing factor, I mean, the major factor in many ways, was the most significant thing about MWC. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are going to sit here and go, oh, you know, this means Symbian's back and Nokia's made the wrong decision. I still don't feel any of the reasons, and it's really around the ecosystem discussion and the partnership discussions have changed with regard to strategy. But as of someone who's written about Symbian for a long time and has a very deep love for the platform, I'm absolutely delighted to see this device, and I really can't wait to get my hands on one.
Yeah, talking of that, it's a frequently asked question in the comments on every single story we do. Someone says, when are you going to review the 808 PureView, Steve? So far, all we've got is prototypes. I'll review it when they've made one, when they've made a retail device.
Sometime
around May?
Yes, I mean, I'll try and write a preview before then based on my kind of hands-on experience and talk about some of the, you know, what's it actually like in the hand and that kind of practical bit of it rather than the technical side. But yes, we've been promised one of the first review devices. I imagine that will arrive in May. That's when the sort of retail release is being talked about. You never know, we might get it at the end of April, and it does seem like a long time to wait. But rest assured, we will be giving it the full review treatment. Steve will be locked in a room, except he won't be locked in a room because he'll want to go outside and use the camera. And he will be giving it the full treatment. I suspect we'll have the most comprehensive imaging review we've ever done by the time the 808 rolls around. And I think you can probably tell from this podcast, we're all rather looking forward to it, and we can't wait to get our hands on it.
Way to lower expectations, Rafe. I'll try and do my best. I'm sure we'll all pitch in as well. Rafe, I'm sure, will have his own ideas on the 808. We've run out of time for this podcast, though. It has been a pleasure, and I'm sure there'll be plenty more 808, PureView, Feature Pack 1, etc. content next week. In the meantime, it's goodbye from Mr. Rafe Blandford.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye from Mr. Gilson.
Goodbye, everybody.
And you can catch us on allaboutsymbian.com, at AS on Twitter. I've got a Facebook group as well. In the meantime, thank you very much for listening. This has been the All About Symbian Inside Podcast.